Welcome to the Mindset Matters podcast, where we dive deep into the world of mindset, entrepreneurship, and real estate. Your host is RJ DeLeon. Whether you're a seasoned business owner, an aspiring entrepreneur, or looking to level up your mindset, this podcast is your go-to resource for inspiration, knowledge, and actionable strategies. Tune in.
Be the hero of your own story. That is a quote by Joseph Campbell. At least we think we can attribute it to him. That is brought to us today by Jeanette Fernandez. Jeanette is the co-founder of a motivational speaker management agency, Powell Speaker Management. She represents the most highly influential thought leaders of our time. She co-founded the company in 2017 and has been in business for over 10 years. In previous years, she managed Chicago's premier indie house record label, overseeing business affairs, negotiating worldwide licensing, and recording and publishing deals. She also opened a restaurant. This sounds crazy, I know. It was in Chicago, which served worldly street food and sponsored cultural events. Shortly after shutting those doors, she took a brief hiatus to rediscover the meaningful work-life balance. She is blessed to be surrounded by everyday people living courageously. Whenever possible, she volunteers her time towards initiatives that empower communities. She also raises and releases monarch butterflies. She bakes killer cookies, and she could also be found driving her teens crazy. Before we introduce her, you're listening to Mindset Matters with your host, RJ DeLeon. We know two things. In life, mistakes and failure are inevitable. We bring on our guests to understand the mindsets that they've created to become successful. This is an audio mastermind to help you navigate challenges of all kinds. Jeanette, how are you? We're coming off of Thanksgiving week. What's going on?
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. Thank you as well for having me.
That introduction is necessary. We were talking about this before we jumped on, that you've not done a podcast. I was like, somebody with so many successes, you definitely need to get your story out there. I'm excited to have you on as a guest. There's always a decision that people make. Am I going to go the corporate career or am I going to be an entrepreneur? How was that journey for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I knew in my heart of hearts that the corporate world wasn't for me. And I knew early on that the options that were available to me while I was going through college didn't align with the things that fueled my creativity or made me feel alive. And as you might know, you know, having a Filipino family, and bless their hearts because they do what they know works and is pretty much guaranteed, right? Medical field, law, engineering, those are the things that are for certain. If you do the work, you will succeed. And they just weren't the types of roles that I saw myself in. And so straight out of college, I think I literally was the worst student ever. I don't even remember doing any of the real work. I slept through the morning sessions. And it wasn't until my senior year in college that I was really entranced by house music, specifically Kashmir, The Percolator, all of those underground goodies that you, if you were around in the 90s, just really inspired everyone on the dance floor to just get them moving. And Casual Records was a record label that I felt just so moved by. And one of the projects for college for one of my courses was interview an executive at a media company. And without most people were thinking, oh, let's go to NBC or ABC or, you know, the traditional media outlets. And I thought, oh, let me just go to Kashmir. And so I interviewed him, and it was such a casual environment. He didn't even know I was coming. Whoever booked it just never told him that I was coming. So fortunately he was there. And so at the end of the interview, he said, are you graduating soon? And I thought maybe he was going to offer me a job, and that really didn't happen. He just said, oh, great. Congratulations. But coincidentally, I think because my love for it, I think something inside you sort of helps put the universal pieces into place. It just so happened that one of my best friends at the time was connected in the DJ world and the house music world and said, hey, my friend thinks he has a job for you. And he said, it's in the music business. And I thought, what does that even mean? You know, I mean, I love music, but what kind of job would I actually have? And when I went into my interview, it was with Kashmir, with Casual Records. And so from there, it really opened my world to a life that books and school could never teach you, because you learn the practical tools, but it's not until you really deep dive into the everyday and the learning and the failure is when you truly just help find where you belong. And from there, you know, as you mentioned, I did a lot of contracting and negotiating and with huge record labels, Sony. It just really gave me a lot of experience. So that was my first deep dive into a world out of traditional corporate.
That's so true, what you said traditionally at the very beginning, where families try to be super safe and they try to steer you in a direction that gives them a level of comfort. You have a job, you'll have a job. And it's consistent. You don't have to worry about the entrepreneur journey. I always find it very interesting how people find their own voice. And this, of course, stemmed out of your passions. What did you study in college?
I studied mass media communication at the University of Illinois in Chicago.
Math, media, communications. It sounds like you are already going down that path. Did you ever work a traditional corporate job?
The only traditional corporate, and this was further along the line, and we can get back to that story, but around 2007, actually, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. I was a mom of two children under two, probably having a very rough marriage at the time. So my only traditionally corporate-ish job was at American Airlines. And that was really not even, you know, a role I wanted. It was almost a role that I needed because I needed benefits. It's those things that you have to think about when you're hit with cancer and a divorce and having small children. Wow. You
know? I'm sorry to hear that, but it shows your strength and power to do what's necessary to get beyond that hurdle. Very thankful to have you here today. That actually brings us to one of the questions then. Because we always know entrepreneurship's a roller coaster ride. Traditionally, a lot of people use their family as their support systems. How did you find yourself coming out of an environment like that? What did you have to tell yourself? What were the mindsets you created during that time of your life that still are carried forward today?
At the time, so honestly, anything that I have done would have been possible without the support system of my parents. You know, they have never pushed me to be anything beyond what I felt was for me. And for that, I'm thankful. Even if my choices didn't make any sense to them, they were never judgmental of it. Not, at least not to me, you know? So for that, they've allowed me to find my way in whatever way that looked like. And so I think for me, the mindsets that got me through were, as you mentioned, knowing that I had to do whatever I needed to do to survive, because this is really more of a survival mode. And then when I felt a little bit of security in, you know, the fact that I wouldn't be out in the streets, you know, things like that, when you have that little security, which my parents did provide for me, I was able to sit down and really think about the things that matter to me in life and how I could be a part of that. How could I be a part of making a difference in this world? Because I feel like I have a duty to, in whatever that I do, to make a difference to and to bring people along in that journey, and not just for myself and not even just for my family, but to have more purpose in everything that I've dedicated my time to.
When we interview the most successful people, it typically starts with this sense of unselfishness. We're not chasing the dollars. We're actually pursuing passions, and we want to make an impact. And that's what you said. You want to make an impact in the world. So you weren't thinking selfishly. At the same time, I'm very happy to hear that you had a family that was very supportive for you. Because oftentimes we get the parent-child syndrome, where the parents just want to tell you and be a dictator, this is what you have to do. And that creates a tension and really a relationship that's not conducive to your growth. Kudos to you. My family was a mix of in-betweens. It's great to always hear the stories, how everybody got there and the support systems. Was there anybody else in your life other than your family that was helping you through these types of times? Who's in your network of support system then versus now?
I think what I love about the industry that I've, or leading with passion, I think there's probably pros and cons to leading with passion, but is seeing the people around me that are friends that I've also known throughout college and high school that have created a life for themselves that you can only dream of and imagine, that most people are probably just really blown away that they could even get to that point in their lives. And some of those people could be, you know, one of my best friends from college. He has just done incredible things for the South Side of Chicago, building cultural events with, you know, he recently had a sound system block party in the streets of Hyde Park with 60,000 people in the street.
Oh, wow.
Just literally dancing to house music and having just this great energetic vibe. He's just done incredible things. And that's only like a snippet. And it had, and actually why I bring him up as well is he and I opened a restaurant together. The one that you mentioned, it was called Square One in Wicker Park. So I know I feel like I'm bouncing around a little bit, but I think being inspired by people's enthusiasm and zest for life and their willingness to keep moving forward, regardless of how difficult things become. And then also seeing people that make it, you know, just even DJ friends who have hundreds of thousands of followers and are still in the business, even after 30 years, just knowing and watching their growth. It's just so inspirational. So really having that, having people inspiring in your circle is really, really what helps.
I think that lends to the fact that you are your social circle. You've had such great people in your life that you can inspire to be. I think back to my childhood and I wonder if I had more entrepreneurial friends, would I be further? It feels like I'm almost nagging them because I have so many ideas and I want to talk to them about all these ideas and they just don't have that mindset. I also think it's very funny that you said that sometimes there could be problems leading with your passions. I had the founder of the Same Same But Different Music Festival on the podcast not too long ago. And he said he was continuing to chase his passions without ever understanding that he needs to make revenue and he needs to make a living. He was preaching that sometimes you do have to have the revenue aspect in mind, which reminded me of what you said there. Tell us a bit about the restaurant closing. If we could go back down some of these paths where you have to decide to close the doors, you have to decide to throw in the towel. How does that work? What were you thinking at the time?
Yeah. So I actually started the restaurant after the music business. And I think towards the tail end of my career in the music business, I was getting that itch of there's something more out there. There's something. And I feel like sometimes when you get that itch, something presents itself. You know, it's almost like you're asking for that door to open, or perhaps even asking the universe for a little bit of a nudge, right? And no matter how that manifests. So my friend Eric felt like it was time to, he actually had he still has a retail store now in Hyde Park, but he said, hey, let's open a restaurant. And I thought, okay, I've never worked in a restaurant ever in my life. And I'm glad that you trust me because I managed a music, you know, a record label.
Yeah.
I mean, the cool thing about the restaurant is there were aspects of entertainment that were infused, like having art, fashion, and music integrated into the everyday, you know, events that happen or that as part of our vision.
Sure.
And so we had DJs every night. We hosted film nights. We had art, fashion, film, music, magazines. I mean, everything that we did was inspired by the local music culture. Well, local and beyond, but really in support of our local artists. And we also, like, as you mentioned, served worldly street food, which is so relevant now, right? And fresh pressed juices.
Oh, yeah.
but back in 2000, that was like, what? We can't smoke in here. We have to drink juice. Where's the liquor? You know, and that was really, it was more about being in the wrong location. You know, location is everything. And in Wicker Park, rent is astronomical. So we're sitting here trying to be affordable to everybody, be everybody's bestie, and trying to make money and have everybody drink fresh juices when really in that neighborhood, you probably needed to sell more wine and beers than anything possibly. Well, maybe relative to what our overhead was, you know? So he and I just had this idea. It was really his idea and he trusted me and we trusted each other and we thought we could do it. We opened it. It was gorgeous. It was everything that we had imagined. But the issue was a mindset issue and also a just running out of financial resources to not only build it in the way we wanted to, but also to sustain it while we were still getting up and running. And there was a point, and I don't think my mindset was as strong. And I was exhausted because, you know, I didn't sleep very much. And when you also stress out about money, your decision making is not as, I don't know, I don't think I was as graceful or grateful, because you're in more of a fearful response mode. And so everything that I was doing was more of a stressed, like, how are we going to make this happen? Not, okay, let's figure out what we need to do. It was more like, okay, our bills are due. What do we, you know, someone stole shrimp out of the back, you know, the back freezer, you know? And so it was dealing with things like that, but also my mindset was not nearly as an abundant mindset that it is now.
That's the type of education you do not get in the books. You can learn all you want how to run a business, but when emotions get involved, that's what makes it very difficult. And we're talking about the entrepreneurship lesson of figuring out who your audience is, figuring out what the theme is, understanding the finances of it, and then not letting your emotions convolute the decisions for the business. What people don't think about is the value that is created by the costs you spent. New entrepreneurs who are grinding it out, they'll think about that cost, that's too much, or I can't pay that. When on the back end, they're not really thinking of what's that can do to your brand? What's that can do to your emotional and mental health? Like hiring a new waiter or waitress or an accountant or a new chef. And those are all things that we all have to deal with. And I admit I'm guilty. I'm going through that process right now. It's so hard to separate emotions, especially when money's involved. And I think you got it right when you're saying have the abundance mindset, because you can't have everything here and now. You got to look at the long-term play, what's down the road. We'll just chalk that up as a learning lesson. I do want to talk about your motivation. You're talking about the abundance mindset. You're talking about following passions. Can you tell us what motivates you and how that's changed throughout the years so that you can have a stronger mindset and a longer perspective?
I think that the journey of all my failures, quote unquote failures, because I know they're simply redirection and they're lessons that are required for the next phase of growth and life and learning. So I think what really helped me is after failing, right, quote unquote failing, I had to remember that everything that I desire in life or picture as being part of my future is already here for me, right? It's really only waiting for me to see it into existence, right? I knew that my vision and dream was already there. And did I really know what that was truly? I mean, even at the restaurant, even starting Powell Speaker Management, I had no idea what it would become. But prior to that, I listed out, and I actually had been listening to Napoleon Hill and You Are a Badass and doing some dream building. So I was really, really putting those practices into place and envisioning what that would look like, what my life would be like when I step into that role, when I do the work. And really it was, I thought of, hey, let me think of the type of people that I would like to represent. And at the time, and still now, I feel like women were underrepresented in the speaking space. So my focus was women. And me being Filipino, I thought, and persons of color, right? Because they're so underrepresented in the speaking space. So that was truly my focus. And when my partner and I developed or created the company, we were really, it was from square one with the building blocks of what are the type of badassery that we wanted to represent. And I think we left it in, you know, we did the work. We consistently networked. We scoured the internet for people that we thought, oh my gosh, this person's incredible. I wonder if they're represented by anyone. And it really came down to that, really having the courage to be turned down so many times, because really leading up my life, leading up to these moments was being told no, Oh, you're feeling, oh no, no, you can't do this. You can't do that. And so by then being told no was not even scary. It was like, okay, well, I'm rejected again. No big deal. Let's keep going. And I feel like for me, having rejection, being rejected constantly helps build your resilience muscle, right? And so you have nothing to lose, and it's only a moment of your life. You're not being judged for it. You are taking a risk, and that takes courage. And so we eventually got yeses to some incredible, the most booked speakers in the world. They weren't the most booked speakers in the world at the time. They had zero bookings, or maybe, you know, a few here and there, but we believed in them as much as they believed in us. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that relationship, which is what created an incredible partnership and an incredible agency. And that, and leading with integrity, I think it all makes for a bit of success and a great reputation in the business.
I like how you said being rejected is no longer a big deal. It's just a moment in time, and it helps build your resilience muscle. Oftentimes we always fear rejection and it holds us back. It becomes very difficult. That has a lot to do with the risk tolerance of the specific person. But just like any skill set, you can learn and you can build your resilience muscle. Is that something that you coined? Have you heard that somewhere? I'm going to coin it for you if not.
You know, I think during the pandemic, that term had been thrown around quite a bit because there was so much uncertainty and job loss and the state of the world. And so resilience is all we had to lean on. And so, yeah, I've heard that so many times that I really don't know. I didn't create that.
Okay. It's the same as grit. It's, you know, all these attributes that come to dealing with it, with adversity. And they're all muscles that you can build. And thankful for you, you had the journey that allowed you to organically be thrown into those situations. But sometimes other people need to be forced there to really understand resilience and grit. It's something that you build. Doing the hard work that you have to do, being in that mindset that this is fight or flight, creates those muscles for you. And sometimes you have to take a step back when you're scared, when fear paralyzes you. You really have to think, what really could go wrong here? What am I really risking? And when I'm telling myself everybody is going to make fun of me, is it really everybody? Or is it just a few people? Like 8 billion people in the world, they're all going to know that I made this one slip up. It's funny the type of limiting beliefs and negative self-talk that we have with ourselves. I guess I'll bring it there. Do you have any limiting beliefs, or what limiting beliefs did you have before that now that you're a successful entrepreneur and you've created this strength mindset and built your resilience muscle, What do you know is fake? And what do you tell yourself because you know it's true?
Throughout this journey, I mean, don't get me wrong. There were times where I thought, and not so far long ago, that I thought maybe I should just go back to school and learn something that I could really, you know, make a decent income at. And, you know, like, what does that look like? And I was searching things that I loved and were passionate about, like, you know, ocean environmentalism, you know, things like that. Like, do I have time to be a scientist right now? I don't even know, you know, I'm going to be in debt. So I did have thoughts like that, you know, of, did I make all the wrong choices throughout this whole journey? Am I just literally, you know, living in a fantasy land? Because who even thinks that being a manager to motivational speakers is a job or is a role that is even attainable, right? Like, that's literally a made up job. So obviously anything in life is possible and available to anyone if you really want it badly enough. Yes. So there were a lot of limiting beliefs, especially when you see yourself make those mistakes and when you have your initial failures or when people, maybe your friends, they all have their corporate jobs and you're sitting here like, you know, selling cookies at a pop-up market because you're like, oh, I have amazing cookies. I think I'm going to sell them, you know.
Which is something you've done, right?
Which is something that I've also done before the speaking, which is kind of funny because that was just something that I stumbled upon. But yes, there's always moments where the harder things become, I used to question my choices. And in the speaking space, there were many times where I thought, it's so competitive. I am just literally, because our clients are so high profile that and highly sought after, that I had the biggest Hollywood agents going after them. And so part of me was like, there's no way I can compete with Hollywood agents. Now I think I should just quit, right? I'm just going to throw in the towel. And something, whenever I would say that, something would happen to reel me back in. And it was this a type of something that reminded me that it's not your time to quit. And I feel like those little signs are everywhere. And so, and I would say to myself, you know what? I think it's time for me to go unless there's a reason I still need to be here, you know, maybe present yourself. Otherwise, I'm literally going to close my door right now and go back to school. And something would always happen. I mean, yeah. I guess we could call that chance, fate, destiny, a higher power, God, universe, you know, speaking to you. I think if there are always signs, and in my experience, there has always been something that helped navigate me towards where I am and towards the people that will help me, that we could help co-create something together. So in that respect, I'm so grateful. But yes, obviously I've always had many doubts. And, you know, even now when people are talking about recessions and, oh, you know, budget cuts, you know, those things are like, okay, now I have to pivot again. What is that going to look like? So now it's always a pivot. What is this going to look like? And what can I learn to navigate towards the new and next change in the industry or in the next phase of my life? I mean, who's to say that this space will be my forever?
If you want something bad enough, you'll make it happen. The whole point about the signs along your journey, I feel like that's a muscle that you also have to strengthen, because somebody else may have seen those signs and quit. They wouldn't have the grit. They wouldn't have the resilience. They would have seen the opportunity, or they would have seen that fate, destiny, that intervention, and not taking notice to it. Whether it's a superpower or a skill set that you can hone, you've had it and you created it and you strengthened that. War of Art, he often talks about the difference between amateurs and professionals. Amateurs, they don't act on these divine interventions. They don't see it as a sign, or they'll take too long, which is the point that we always try to get across. And I hope you will instill that entrepreneur in a lot of our listeners that are aspiring to be somebody in your position or somebody very successful that have these limiting beliefs. Because the whole point of the show is to know we're all human. We all have those doubts. We all have those fears. And I would bet, and I'm going to bet, that no matter where your journey takes you, you're still going to have those thoughts of, did I do the right thing here? What would life have been if I made the opposite choice? And that's one of those things that I've been trying to become better at myself, because once you make a decision, you should not think about the what ifs. You should not think about the past. If you need to pivot, sure, pivot. However, it does nobody any good by thinking about what could have been if I did this, because that moment's gone. We now need to focus on the future. One of the things is, during your path, you had all these thoughts about you can't do it, but now you're booking the largest, most influential speakers in the world. Was there a turning point or a pivot where now you're like, I could definitely do this? What did that look like for you?
I think that not only when the bookings started rolling in, that other speakers were reaching out to me for representation. And then the feedback from clients telling my speakers while they were on site how much they loved me, right? And then my speakers telling me that they would never leave me. I feel like at that point, you have to really own up to, okay, you did something right here and you did something really special. And sometimes it's easy to be hard on yourself because sometimes it's easier to keep reaching for more, but then not feeling that gratitude for how far you've come and the journey that, you know, that led you to this moment. So it's really me definitely stopping to take notice and appreciating it, because it's easy for me to not take compliments and say, oh gosh, just don't worry. Oh my gosh. No, I'm not that great, you know, but it's also that self-talk.
Yeah.
By saying things like, hey, I'm not that great. Well, you're really putting it out there that you're not that great. So it's really also minding your words and what you put out there, because what you put out there becomes your truth. And that is also what I know to be true for me. And I feel like it's true for everyone. And monitoring the self-talk and even if I spoke to you in casual conversation and I said, oh gosh, I just suck at that sometimes, you know, I'm just the worst. And I think things, you never want to put it out there for the universe to mirror to you your internal dialogue, right? So I always project verbally. And when I catch things in my mind, I reframe it. And so that way I'm more intentional about what I speak, do, and think. And also when things do pop in my mind, I don't own them as, oh, that's me and the truth. That's okay. That's a thought. That's not part of my reality. And it's just a thought. So, you know, adios.
Yeah. That's very powerful. It's a powerful statement because words have power. And we don't understand really the effects that what we tell ourselves has on our physiological selves, which is so crazy. And what you just said there is, you know, when you're talking about voices in your head, that wasn't you. I actually just read that in this book, The Four Agreements, that the world tends to have voices, and there could be 100 voices in your head, and they're not speaking you from this plane of life, or they're not actually you. So I loved how you phrased that there, because I literally just read that this morning. But you got to be more intentional. You got to be fast to quiet down that self-talk. Because whether or not you're vocalizing it out to the world or internalizing it, it's going to affect how you behave and how you act. The first person that should be your biggest support should be yourself. It was also in The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod, where he's saying these behavioral changes can only shift if you stop telling yourself you are one way or the other. Stop telling yourself, I'm not a morning person. Say, I need to get better at waking up in the mornings, and I'm going to work on that. Because what you tell yourself ends up becoming your character, which is why words are so powerful. And I love that you brought that up, Jeanette. Thank you so much.
Well, the funny thing is, before you even showed me your Four Agreements book, I literally was thinking, oh yeah, I think that was inspired by being impeccable with your word from the Four Agreements. And then you pull out the book and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, that's a nice little.
Exactly. Which brings me to the next thing. The one thing that you mentioned early on in your story was the books that you were reading to strengthen your mindset. And now we just pulled that out and it was like serendipitous that I just had the books in here that we were talking about that. So it's all about educating yourself and strengthening your mindset, going from a growth mindset, from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset, which was also in a book I read, Mindset by Carol Dweck. So what has influenced you? And do you have any books, mantras, any behaviors that you would like to tell the audience that help you in your day-to-day?
I think really for me is realizing and truly realizing and feeling and believing that everything you want or aspire to be is accessible to you. And it's really about doing the work and being intentional and seeing those signs that help redirect you and where you need to be or where you want to be. Sometimes it doesn't look the way you envision it. So for example, I once told myself, I would love to represent three female speakers that are, you know, $60,000 speakers, you know, and it just so happened that I represent a few speakers, but one that are some that are triple that number, but for one person. So for example, like $200,000 for one speaker. And so I thought, wow, I wished for three at 60, but I got one for, you know, triple that amount. So
yeah,
it doesn't always manifest in the way that you envision it, but I feel like sometimes it just finds a way. And I know that's not scientifically proven, but I feel like it. I've seen it happen so many times to so many incredible people, even just being in the industry with so many people from stories that are, you know, zero to, you know, coming from, you know, alcoholism and verge of homelessness to inspiring millions. You know, how does that even happen? And so just being in the space in itself is inspirational enough. And I also look to everyone that I work around to help fuel me with that as well. And obviously there's so many great books out there that we've already mentioned that are wonderful tools to help get you started on that growth mindset.
Great. Well, although we asked for a book, we got a mindset. And that mindset shift has to come, guys, no matter where you find it from. So I'm going to put this out there. I would like to be a $100,000 speaker. How can you help me, Jeanette?
How can I help you?
Okay. I'm just joking. We don't have
to. No, I mean, if anyone wants to be a speaker, I'm happy to tell you how to achieve that. Yeah. And,
please do.
Yeah, this is something that I tell anyone that reaches out to me. Obviously, you have to know what your expertise is, right? Some people say, oh, I have a motivational story. But the fact of the matter is that the industry is so, it's just been flooded with motivational stories that now you need more actionable tools and proven steps. Give me the takeaways. Give me the action items that I can walk away with. I can write it down. I can put into practice this very moment. So having the story is great, but then having the action items and deliverables that stick. Having a speaking reel with you on stage, and it also helps to have audience interaction. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, people have to hire me first before I get on stage. I mean, you could honestly speak free for organizations and just have it filmed, you know, say, hey, I'd love to speak to your, you know, your teams about goal setting or something like that, or whichever topic that you'd like to explore, and make sure you're an expert at what you're speaking about. You know, I have received a lot of inquiries of people wanting to be motivational speakers. And then the moment I ask for certain things, bios, topics, descriptions, testimonials, a speaking video, it becomes overwhelming. But the number one selling tool for any incredible speaker is having that video and having your takeaways outlined, because how else can anyone pitch you, right? So that's a good place to start.
Perfect. That actually comes at good timing. Tomorrow I'm entertaining a room with about 175 people for the Chicago Multifamily Club, which is a group that I run that I help mentor new investors into getting into the correct mindset to be in the multifamily investing space. And I am saying words tomorrow, but I had no intention of recording. And nice. I've said a lot of words in front of the groups before, and we run this meetup on a monthly basis. I'm going off topic here, but a lot of our audience are real estate investors, are entrepreneurs that want to get into the real estate space or investing. So I recommend that you guys come to the Chicago Multifamily Club events, which we're an organization with over 4,000 members now. And we are always education, never a sales pitch. Our holiday party is December 2nd. We are recording this podcast on December 1st, and you could find tickets on Eventbrite as the Chicago Multifamily Holiday Party. So we can take this as one of those moments, that serendipitous moment just happened. I had asked you a question jokingly, but instead you answered it. And now I could gear myself up for success for something that I want to do in the future, i.e. recording my speech in front of everybody, maybe preparing a little bit more than I was intending on, finding my purpose. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Of course.
I think we could end there, but we always have a bonus round. But before we go into the bonus round, I want to ask, is there anything else that you would like to share to the audience?
Thank you for listening. It's always grateful to be a resource in any way that I can to help other people find their purpose in life.
I'm very happy to have you on, because representing such powerful names in the industry, other, you know, there's somebody in the background, somebody that runs that show, and your voice is definitely inspirational as well. We're very happy to have you on.
Thank you. So,
let's jump into the fun round. Okay. The fun round is a series of questions that I ask our guests just so that we could get a little bit better understanding of who you are. The first question that I always ask is, what is the weirdest food that you ate as a child? And would you or do you still eat it today?
I think the weirdest food that I've ever had was in the Filipino culture, and I don't even know the name of it. Oh, no, it's like dinuguan or something. It's like
pig's blood.
it's like blood with tripe. And so, right? Is it tripe?
Yep. It's, I think, tripe. There's tripe. There's liver. It's black. It looks like chocolate. But I'm not going to let you escape there, because that dish is actually pretty good. It's just knowing what's in it is weird. Is there anything else? Like, the other day I had a guest on and he said he took day-old pizza, scraped off the cheese and put sugar on it, and that was his indulgence.
Oh, like, my gosh. No. Well, to your point about the tripe, I'm vegetarian now. So, and I've been a vegetarian since I was in college. The thought of just sitting there drinking blood and and tripe is kind of gross. But the weirdest things that I would eat, this isn't even really that weird. I mean, I think growing up, my parents were always busy working. So my grandmother would give me something like white toast with margarine and sugar on it. And that was my breakfast. That's a breakfast of champions.
Well, actually, if you think about it, that's pretty much what like Wheaties is. It's just grains with like sugar, which is, it's crazy. But I was telling the same story where with the same guest that I had cousins that would eat white rice with milk and sugar, like a cereal. And I was like, what is going on?
Was it cooked like a porridge, or were they just like,
No, it's just cooked white rice put into a bowl, poured milk on it, and then adding sugar. Sort of like
Rice Krispies.
Exactly. You can think of it like a cereal. That's so crazy. Oh, wow. Maybe I should try that. Okay. We're going to take your weirdest food being white toast with margarine and sugar on top, which you do not do today, based on how you said that story. I'm going to assume that you do not do that today.
No.
Okay, perfect. Second question. If your best friend could describe you without you hearing the answer, how would they describe you as a teenager?
Pretty bold, I think. As a teen, I probably wore the craziest things, meaning like, you know, I think in the 19s, like, so maybe just slightly out of high school, my mom would help me create these hot pants that I made out of like an old jacket. And then I would just head to the clubs with a fake ID and wear crazy, crazy outfits. But then I also, for some reason, pretended like I wasn't smart, which is so weird to me. So playing a little ditzy and bold in my creative attire.
Go ahead.
But a loyal, definitely a loyal and awesome friend.
Great. So you're bold, you're creative, you can act like you're ditzy, but very loyal. I like that. That's great. If you were stranded on a deserted island, nobody around, and you could have no human contact or watch any shows of any kind, but you could have access to any tools, any books that you want, what would you find yourself doing?
I would probably be reading any sort of spiritual text about the existence of life. Wow. So whether it could be the Bhagavad Gita or even maybe the Bible, just things that are a source of inspiration for our existence. Not like in a religious sense, in like a strict religious sense, but more of like a spiritual, purposeful insights.
That's a new one. That's great. I didn't even know what that first thing you said was. So that's my bit. Anyway.
And I actually, if I could maybe possibly learn Kung Fu.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. Things like that. Learn Kung Fu. And you could be taught that out of a book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know how good I would be, but
exactly.
Learning Kung Fu from a book, but yeah.
You could train with Wilson and he's a volleyball. Where is the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
I would have to say at this moment, Bohol in the Philippines, okay. Which is an island closest to Cebu, which is, I don't know, breathtaking, but I feel like many islands in the Philippines are fairly breathtaking.
Let's go open a resort somewhere.
Yeah,
let's do it. That would be so great. What does the future look like for you?
The future looks like for me is kind of an open-ended chapter, I think. I really try not to, or I don't feel like I want to be completely set in how the story unfolds, but I really follow my heart and where I feel like the trajectory and, you know, I really like to think of how meeting new people and being thrown into certain circumstances, or obviously co-creating these circumstances, could take me anywhere. Honestly, I don't even know. That's, I guess, the beauty of this journey. Like, I could be on a spaceship in 10 years. I don't even know.
We could.
We could
Elon
be in
Musk. Jeff Bezos, they got a couple spaceships. Richard Branson, I believe. I mean, who knows? We could.
I know.
The point is, the future looks like an open book to where you're following your heart and listening to the journey.
Yes.
I like that.
And creating impact in whatever that is. And right. You know, for me, the speaking world and being surrounded by people who are really transforming lives is a great purpose to be a part of.
Yeah. Significant impact is huge. And if you guys don't know, go look up Powell Speaker Management and follow some of their guests. Be advocates of what they are trying to instill in everybody, because it is very, very motivational. And when I actually first spoke with Jeanette, it was because my cousin introduced us and I was like, wait, she represents those people? Because I listen to a lot of them. And it could be a very impactful thing for you all who are listening. Last question here. This is an easy one. It's a layup. And how can people get a hold of you if they would like to learn more?
Yes, you can email me, but no spam.
No spam, guys.
No spam at Jeanette@PowellSpeakers.com. And that's, should I spell it out or should I direct you to my?
Okay. But we'll also have it in the show notes.
Okay. But it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah.
Jeanette@PowellSpeakers.com. Or I'm also on LinkedIn as well, which I will provide you that link too.
Sure. Jeanette@PowellSpeakers.com. I recommend that everybody go take a look, follow some of their speakers and support, because like we've been talking about, they are some of the most influential speakers in the world. And because of what Jeanette wanted to create, they're all making significant impacts in the lives of the everyday individual. So thank you. Before we jump off, guys, I just want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. If you like this show, please give us a 5-star review, share it with a friend, like us, follow us. Again, like I said at the beginning, currently this podcast is not being monetized. So it really helps if you all share with a friend. And with that, I will say goodbye. So thanks, guys. See ya.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Mindset Matters. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay updated. We'd also appreciate it if you'd leave us a review. Your feedback helps us improve the show. Thank you for being a part of the community, and remember to keep that positive mindset. Until next time.